The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tune Into the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, my great Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. No AAA today. We got USFL Week 3, as well as some NFL draft reactions. All right, Nathan, what do we got for USFL?
Man, what a crazy weekend. It's honestly super weird how each of these games kind of resulted. But anyway, let's go ahead and jump right into, of course, starting with the Offensive Player of the Week, New Orleans Breakers running back Wes Hills. Totally ran through the Stallions defense. 34 carries, 191 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He was phenomenal. Back-to-back weeks where he just had such a great impact for the Breakers. The Defensive Player of the Week being Pittsburgh Maulers linebacker Reuben Foster. Amazing to see him get this award. He had 11 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, an interception, and 2 passes deflected. And the Special Teams Player of the Week being Pittsburgh Maulers kicker Chris Blewett, who had he went 5 for 5 and he had a 50-yard field goal. Honestly, just looking at this week as a whole, you look at each of these games, you did not expect this matchup. I mean, the results of this game were just crazy. Let's go ahead and start off with probably the game of the week, in my opinion. New Orleans Breakers took on the Birmingham Stallions. New Orleans ended up winning 45-31 in what was an amazing shootout. The Breakers were pretty dominant in this game. I think offensively, they were just outstanding. Their defense made huge plays. It seemed like the Stallions offense couldn't get in a good rhythm, and the Stallions defense did not make it off the bus. To start out, what Wes Hills has been able to do for the Breakers has he is off the charts. He is one of the best running backs in the league right now. He is just such a dominant downhill runner, and you know, he just makes such a big impact for him. Of course, you know, we talked about the quarterback battle coming into this game, what Alex McGee could do, what McLeod Bethel-Thompson could do. And Bethel-Thompson, he was just him. He went 20-28, 283 yards and 3 touchdowns. And it seemed like every single time he was just making these heads-up plays. You had these third and longs, and he just find someone open in the zone and get that first down. So he made a huge impact. But I'm not going to ramble on about how good this team was. You look at the other side of the ball, and what the Stallions failed to do was get stops on defense in crucial third down situations. You expect so much from this defense, and they provided so little throughout this game. Alex, watching this game, how could you fix the Stallions defense and the way they played?
Yeah, look at the offense. It was like they were back in week one. They couldn't run the ball at all. Their leading rusher was C.J. Marable with 24 yards. We saw week two that they greatly improved with that, but it's like they just fell back on what they did in week one. Definitely got to keep that consistent and improve it as what they did in week two. But then at their wide receiver and their weapons there, they had Davion Davis with 123 yards receiving. And then outside of that, you really just had nobody getting open, catching passes from Alex Magoo. Jay Sternberger had his weekly touchdown from him. But outside of that, it was really disappointing. I mean, Alex Magoo played as best as I think he possibly could. Obviously, not as great as last week, but I think he managed the game pretty well. It's just the fact that you look at the Stallions defense, they couldn't stop anything. I mean, the Breakers were just had an answer for everything they threw at them. And uncharacteristically, the Stallions had 0 sacks. I can't remember the last time the Stallions didn't record a sack in a game. That's probably the big difference here. The Breakers just, I think they had the Stallions number this game. And you look at how the Breakers dominated time of possession. They had over 36 minutes. Stallions had over 23. That's one of the other difference makers there. And going into this game, I thought Stallions were just going to absolutely demolish the Breakers, especially what they did against the Showboats last week. But the Breakers surprised me here. They're the only undefeated team left now. I'm just surprised how good this Breakers team is after last season.
Yeah, same here. I was not expecting this kind of outcome for this game. I thought the Stallions defense would, even without some of their top players, would still be able to get stops on the defensive end and in the red zone and be able to get pressure on Bethel Thompson. But they just, they were absolutely unbelievable. That Breakers offense, Wes Hills is proving to be one of the better running backs in the entire USFL so far this season. He had an unbelievable game, almost 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's just a winning type of game right there from him. I'm excited to see about what this Breakers team, they obviously they've improved, just like you said, Alex. I'm excited to see what they can, if they can kind of keep on this momentum going into the later part of the season.
I think that definitely the biggest factor, you know, not having access to Scooby Wright or JoJo Torre for that Saladin's defense, you know, hadn't affected them in the first two games. It definitely affected them this game. They didn't really have a defined leader on that defense during this game, and it came back to bite them. Anyways, let's go ahead and move on to the second game from Saturday. The Memphis Showboats took on the Houston Gamblers, and the Gamblers ended up winning 30-26. This was really a back and forth game. The Showboats definitely improved from what we saw last week. And the Gamblers, they took care of business when they needed to. You look at quarterback Kenji Bahar, and he's kind of gotten to this point where he's been improving a little bit each week. I know he still has problems with interceptions, but he was 22-36, 235 yards and two touchdowns. He did have one interception. But the highlight of this game where his team continues to be the running game. You look at what Mark Thompson was able to do, 21 carries, 81 yards, and two touchdowns. He's just a really good red zone threat when they get down there in the short yardage. So they were able to take care of defense on the offensive end, and, you know, their defense did just enough to hold the Showboats team back. Alex, what did you see from the Showboats team? Obviously, like, they improved a whole bunch, going from scoring 2 points to 26 points. So they come up short in this game. How could you improve them to get to the point where they actually win?
Yes, going into this game, they replaced their starting quarterback from last week, and they started Cole Kelly this week. He was 21 of 38, not great. And he was their leading rusher with 17 yards rushing. That's definitely something you look to improve considering your running back. Kareth White got a total of 6 yards on three carries. I think they try to run an air raid type of offense. Did not help them here. I think if you want to win a game for the Showboats, you're going to have to get this running game going, just like the Stallions to get for them. I think that's just the main thing for them, is get that running game going. And then you look at the Gamblers. I've been calling for Kenji Bahar to get benched for the past few weeks. But in week three, he limited his turnovers. He had one interception, and that was it. Thought that was great for him to improve that. That was probably the difference there, him limiting that. Saw that a couple weeks ago where that was the reason they lost the game. And then getting Mark Thompson back, their running back from injury, was also a big get for them to pair him with TJ Pledger. That running back duo really won in this game, in my opinion. I think the Gamblers, if they can keep the running game going and Kenji Bahar can keep these turnovers down, won't be a great team in this league, but can be above average.
I think the one thing for me, for the Showboats at least, is obviously replacing their starting quarterback and starting Cole Kelly was an interesting move. And he had 300 yards and two touchdowns to one interception. He did not have a bad game, but there some of the play calling, just like Alex said, kind of mimicked an air raid type of offense. I just don't think that's going to be their long-term success in this league like that, especially with Cole Kelly starting at quarterback. I mean, you just can't have your quarterback have 17 yards to be your leading rusher, especially with kind of the way this season has gone, where, you know, looking down the line and looking at past games, the team that has more rushing yards has most of the time been the winner and has come out on top. So I think they've got to kind of rearrange that offense a little bit, kind of adjust some play calling and see what's happening for them next.
Yeah, well, now the Showboats are the only one I've seen in the week because, you know, moving on to the first game from Saturday, the Pittsburgh Maulers decided they wanted to get themselves a win over the Philadelphia Stars, beating them 21-13. For as much as we've ragged on the Maulers, talked about how trash they were, there's not a really good word to describe, but we've done the insult the Maulers. But they come here and they prove us wrong. I thought that this Philadelphia Stars team was much better than they actually are. The amount of talent they had, I thought that it would just be an out talent scenario. But the Maulers came in, they dominated. It wasn't so much that their offense was great, but, you know, you just look at their defense. Their defense is the shining part of this team. You look at Reuben Foster and what he's able to do on the defensive end. He's really become the leader for that Maulers defense. And Case Cookis, you know, has to try to do it all for the Stars again. And like we talked about last week, it's not one of the scenarios that he can just do that for you. He gets overwhelmed. So the Stars follow up short, and the Maulers took up a win. Alex, I know we didn't see this coming. We thought there was no way that the Mowers were even going to come close to a win. Your immediate thoughts following this game?
The Mowers' offense still sucks. Quarterback has 96 passing yards, gets bailed out by his defense, like you mentioned, Nathan, going over the top and forcing two turnovers on Case Cookis. I think that's the only reason they won this game. Then you look. I'm not really sure what to think of this Mars offense. You have no this shining part of it. Your leading rusher was your quarterback. Your leading receiver had 35 yards. I don't know how the Mars won this game other than the fact that their defense forced two turnovers. But then you look at the Stars. Like you mentioned, Nathan, I thought they were going to be much better than this. Losing to the Mars is not a good look. But when your leading rusher has 16 yards. Just like with the Showboats against the Gamblers, don't expect to win a game. That's been really their Achilles heel these past few games. Not being able to run the ball effectively, especially with Matt Colburn at running back and Dexter Williams backing him up, you expect to get a lot more than a combined 20 yards from those guys. It feels like Case Cookis is just on an island out there, having to do everything for the Stars team. And then the difference, in my opinion, overall, was the Stars defense did not force a turnover against the Maulers. That was probably the main reason the Maulers were able to get this win, winning the turnover battle.
Yeah, winning the turnover battle and the Stars not being able to establish the running game were the reasons the Maulers' horrible offense was able to get their first win. But talking about the Stars, just like both of y'all mentioned, this is a way too talented team to be losing this sort of game, especially on the offensive end with all kinds of talent around Case Cookis. And after week one, we were like, oh, this Stars team may be top three in the whole USFL, but it's hard to say that now. But for the Maulers, we had to know that Reuben Foster was going to end up winning at least one of these games by himself at some point, and he basically just did with 11 tackles, 2 for loss, and then that one interception. Really impressed by the Maulers' defense. If they can keep that up, I just don't know how far they can get with that horrible offense, not being able to run the ball, not being able to throw the ball, no true go-to guy for Troy Williams. I don't know what to think, but really concerned about the Stars after this game, though.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say that the Stars can go sit in the timeout chair and face the corner, because I don't want to look at them anymore after what they just did this weekend. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the last game of the week. You had the New Jersey Generals taking on the Michigan Panthers. And, you know, like all these other games, the result surprised at least me. I thought the Michigan Panthers were one of the top three best teams in the league, and they come out against the Generals and they just look flat on the offensive end. You really look at this Generals team, and their offense has not been able to do much over these past few weeks. It's probably been the reason that the games have been so close for them. I don't understand how the Panthers put themselves in this situation. Quarterback Josh Love was horrid. I mean, he completed under 50% of his passes, threw an interception, only passed for 101 yards. They put Carson Strong in. He did mediocre. And Reggie Corbin just was not able to get going in this game. It's just this huge surprise from what we saw last week, where Reggie Corbin just had this absolute dominant game, to this week where he only gets 8 carries and 38 yards on the ground. It's just overall surprising. Just talking about this Generals defense, it hasn't looked like anything special over the past few games, but they come in this game, they just completely shut down this Panthers offense. And it's not like the Generals offense is off the charts at all. You look at quarterback DeAndre Johnson. He hasn't had a super good game. He only passed 15 times and only completed 10 of his passes, 180 yards through the air and 2 touchdowns. But you look at him, he's the team's leading rusher with 98 yards. He did get a touchdown on the ground. Darius Victor didn't have this unbelievable game like I thought he would if the Generals were to win this game. So it's just really surprising what the Generals were able to do here.
Yeah, looking at the Panthers, I mean, they dominated time of possession, 35 minutes to 24. They had more plays than the Generals, but the Generals did outgain them. The main thing with the Generals is they had a lot of chunk plays. You had the long run from DeAndre Johnson. Then you had Darius Victor, who had a 51-yard receiving touchdown. And you had Alonzo Moore, a receiver, having a 72-yard touchdown. That was kind of the big difference there with him having the big chunk plays compared to the Michigan Panthers. A very stagnant offense. And with the Generals, they only played one quarterback. Said it last week, they got to pick one and stick with it. This two-quarterback system is not working. And they did this week, and they found success. I don't expect them to go back to that two-quarterback system unless it becomes a dire thing. But I think the way they did this week with this DeAndre Johnson being the primary quarterback, the only guy on the field at that position, really benefited them. I mean, moving on to the Panthers, week one, Josh Love looked like MVP. The last 2 weeks has not looked great. He looks like the quarterback the Panthers had last year. Then, like you mentioned, Nathan Carson Strong came in relief, looked okay, not really, you know, MVP caliber like we saw Josh Love week one. But the main difference, just like you mentioned, Nathan, was the fact they weren't able to get the running game going like they were last week and bail out the poor quarterback play. Stevie Scott and Reggie Corbin did not run the ball really effectively, did not find the end zone at all. The Panthers defense, who really put the hung their hat on the past few weeks, was only able to get one sack, didn't have a TFL, didn't have an interception, only got one pass defended. The defense looked like the Mike Nolan defense you saw in the NFL at the Cowboys for his last season as defense coordinator. Panthers, I think they got to get this quarterback position figured out. Thought I had it figured out week one. Since then, has looked atrocious. So get that quarterback position figured out for the Panthers. Get back to what you're doing on defense. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, this week in USFL has really told me two things. Number one, it really surprised me with all the outcomes. Like all four games, I would have picked the opposite to win probably. But it's also proved over and over again that you've got to be able to run the football to win in this league. And whoever has the most rushing yards, whether it's a dominant running back like we saw with Wes Hills this week, or a double running back effort, or your quarterback's able to run the ball effectively, or you're able to get a chunk run, just like Alex was talking about just then. If you're not able to run the ball, you're not going to be successful in this league. And that proved this week with every team that had the higher amount of rushing yards won the game. And shout out to the Generals in this game, being able to run the ball effectively against this Panthers defense. I mean, that's really, really impressive. And it was a great win for them.
Yeah, it was definitely a week that threw everyone for a turn. I don't expect a repeat of what happened this weekend, but you know, it could be very, very, very surprising to see it happen again next weekend. Anyway, we had the NFL draft five by last week. Some big picks, some good team drafts. Gray, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so obviously the NFL draft was this past weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. All seven rounds. It was interesting. Had some weird trades. Had some weird picks. Some really good picks. But I want to get y'all's thoughts on each of these questions. Alex, I'll start with you. So, which team do you think had the best draft out of all seven rounds?
Yeah. So I look at all these teams. You have the Eagles on there. The Giants, I think, had one of probably the top two drafts. But in my opinion, the Pittsburgh Steelers had the best draft. Look, they got in round one. They got offensive tackle Broderick Jones to help protect Kenny Pickett, their first-round pick last year. I don't know how they were able to do it, but they got Joey Porter with the first pick in the second round. And the fact he was there and still on the board just was mind-boggling to me. He'll come in and be a day-one starter for this team who really lacks some depth at the corner position. Also got a defensive tackle, Keanu Benton, to plug that hole in the defensive side of the ball. And then one of the biggest steals of the draft, and really a head-scratcher to me, Darnell Washington going in the third round at tight end. The fact he was even there in the second round is surprising to me. I thought he was the best tight end in this draft class. So to pair him with Pat Freiermuth is going to be a big thing for the Steelers offense. I just think the Steelers really won this draft, how they were able to get some steals like Joey Porter and Darnell Washington, who were arguably top 32 players in this draft class.
You know, I go back and forth and look at all these teams and what they were able to do in this draft. But, you know, I think the biggest team, and, you know, it's a little bit controversial. They didn't have an overall good draft. But the Texans probably have one of the better drafts, being able to, you know, get, CJ Stroud at two, even though I don't think that he was the right pick at two. They did get their quarterback that they wanted, and then somehow they convinced the Cardinals to give up the third overall pick for a penny and a stale potato chip. and they were able to get Will Anderson at three. I think that those are probably the two biggest points of the draft. And you just look at how much impact those guys will have on their team. It just really is mind-boggling why the Cardinals gave up the third pick like that.
Yeah, for me, it's got to be the Philadelphia Eagles, man. The two first-round picks, they picked two Georgia players, Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith, to pair with Jordan Davis on that defensive front. I mean, that's insane. And then in the second round, they were able to get Tyler Steen. And then later on in the third round, they were able to get Keely Ringo, another Georgia defensive back. A lot of the people said we were one of the top corners in this entire draft, outside of like Devon Witherspoon and maybe Joey Porter. But I think the Eagles losing in the Super Bowl last year, and they just come in and just reload, especially on the defensive side of the ball with Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, and Keely Ringo all coming from Georgia. That's a very impressive move and a very impressive draft. So, Alex, I'll go right back to you. Just the question, the opposite direction, though. Which team had the worst draft? What were y'all doing this weekend?
I look at some teams, and I landed on the Los Angeles Chargers. They drafted Quentin Johnson in the first round at receiver. I don't think that was the best pick. He plays eerily similar to Michael Williams they already have there. Thought going with a guy like Jordan Addison at their pick would have been more beneficial to them. Thought he was more polished as a prospect. Quentin Johnson kind of scares me. Some games it looked like he was second coming up to DeAndre Hopkins. Then he looked like Kevin White the next game. So that was really a risk for them there. Thought they probably should have gone a corner. Then they drafted Tuli Tupelo in the second round. Defensive lineman, didn't like that pick either. Their defensive lineman picks in the past few drafts have not been great. And then overall, they did not even address their biggest need, in my opinion, at the corner position and safety position. They didn't draft a single one. The fact they didn't do that makes it probably the worst draft, in my opinion. I don't think this Chargers team got much better.
You know, I think this one was pretty easy to pick, given the Detroit Lions and what decisions they made. Especially taking Jahmyr Gibbs with the 12th overall pick. He was definitely going to be there in the second round. I don't think there was any doubt in my mind he was going to be there. But then they go from that pick into an even more surprising pick, and so like Jack Campbell with the 18th overall pick. A guy who probably wasn't going to be looked at in the first three rounds of the NFL draft goes 18th overall to the Lions. When you had so many good guys on the board, I mean, obviously Lucas Van Ness, you know, got taken before them. I think that he was a good fit for this Lions team. But you know, it was the pick right after, you know, where they selected Jahmyr Gibbs. I thought that it was going to be a really good fit for Lucas Van Ness to go to the Lions. But they instead selected running back with the 12th overall pick. You know, it's really a back and forth, because I've been back and forth on, you know, teams selecting running backs in the first round, and they just obviously do not make the amount of impact to warrant drafting them in the first round. And I know Jahmyr Gibbs is very, very versatile, but he is still a running back. And then they go and trade DeAndre Swift to the Eagles for a penny. You know, just the overall draft for the Lions was horrible. I did like how they were able to get Brian Branch with the 45th overall pick. But, you know, it was really, really poor with what they did in the first round.
They got Jalen Carter.
Yeah.
And they just traded the pick and said, nope, we're good. We'll take Jahmyr Gibbs.
For me, I think it's the Dallas Cowboys, because they drafted two Michigan Wolverines in their first and second round picks that were just as questionable as I've ever seen, with Mazi Smith as their 26th overall pick, drafted him over guys like Nolan Smith, which I can't wrap my head around that. Mazi Smith was not a first round talent, and I didn't see one person have them in their first round. I didn't even know he was on the Cowboys' radar like that. And then they go take Luke Schoonmaker, the tight end, in their second round, which, I mean, that's – and at 58, that's not terrible. But over Darnell Washington? Are you serious? that's ridiculous. I don't know what was going through Jerry Jones's mind. I mean, I know they were able to get guys like Deuce Vaughn and Jalen Brooks in their sixth and seventh round. I mean, those may be okay pickups later on, but I can't wrap my head around those first two draft picks. So moving on, Alex, going back to you, who do you think got the biggest steal? Who do you think the biggest steal in the draft was?
Yeah, so the Buffalo Bills being able to pick Cyrus Torrance, the offensive guard, in the second round at pick 28 in that round. I thought he was one of the best guard prospects you've seen in a while. He didn't allow a single sack in his college career. I was surprised using him there in the second round. Definitely thought he was a top 20 talent, in my opinion. So getting be able to pair him with Josh Allen on the Bills' offensive side of the ball and be able to protect him is going to be amazing. He'll be a mainstay there for years. I'm not even sure how somebody let the Bills get him this late, but they really needed to rethink how that happened.
You know, Alex, like you were talking about earlier, with the Steelers draft, the fact that Darnell Washington was, you know, so available in the third round, the very late third round, they got him with the 93rd overall pick. It was crazy. I thought Darnell Washington was by far the best tight end in the draft. I really think he is a generational talent. I know he's had a few injury problems in the past with his knees specifically, but you know, you look at what Darnell Washington was able to do at Georgia. He was a complete mismatch on the field, not only, you know, just blocking, but when he got into the pass game, and especially in the red zone area, he was just taller than everyone else. He was just catching the ball above him. So for the Steelers to be able to get Darnell Washington in the third round like that was just insane.
I'm going to go with another Steelers player. I mean, Alex, you nailed that with the best draft. I think them able to get Joey Porter with the first overall pick in the second round, I know that's not really late for most people would call a steal, but some people had Joey Porter as the first or second cornerback taken in this draft. Like he was one of the top picks in the draft, and for him to fall to the second round was crazy in general. I love that fit there with his dad playing there. I think that's going to be an awesome fit with him at Pittsburgh. But I think Joey Porter can be qualified as a steal, even though he was picked, what, number 32 or something?
But, yeah, 32.
Yeah. So, Alex, on the other side of the spectrum here, who do you think reached the farthest in a pick? Like, what do you think was the biggest reach?
Yeah, so Nathan kind of alluded to it earlier. Jack Campbell going in the first round of the 18th pick to the Lions was a definite reach for me. I think he would have definitely been there in the second round. He was, I think, the best inside linebacker in this draft class, according to a lot of people. But you look at the Lions, they have Alex Anzalone at linebacker, and they also have Malcolm Rodriguez there as well. So I don't think Jack Campbell really was needed for them. Definitely thought at 18 they should have gone with a corner, especially if they traded Jeff Okuda. It was just mind-boggling to me, their first two picks, Jack Campbell and Jahmyr Gibbs. Jack Campbell was the worst of the two, in my opinion. I don't know what they were thinking. But also, I have to give a big shout-out here to the Atlanta Falcons for going ahead and wasting the eighth overall pick on Bijan Robinson at running back, considering they already have Cordell Patterson and Tyler Allgeier. So good for the Falcons wasting your eighth overall pick.
Could have gotten Jalen Carter.
Yeah, go ahead and throw him a pizza party. And, you know, I would probably say that the Falcons definitely reached on Bijan, especially, you know, how Jalen Carter was just sitting there and, you know, they need defense badly. But I really look at what the Jets were thinking when they selected Will McDonald, the DN of Iowa State, with the 15th overall pick. There were so many better people available. And I felt like it was a huge reach. I think that Will McDonald was going to be available probably late into the third round. You still had a guy in Miles Murphy on the board. But, you know, get on the Jets for taking old McDonald out of farm with the 15th overall pick.
For me, I've got to go back to when I talked about the worst draft. I've got to go back to Mazi Smith going to the Cowboys at number 26. That's mind-boggling to me. He was probably a third round talent. I mean, he's very good, but I don't understand how that who made that pick. Was it Jerry Jones? Because we got some issues to talk about there. So, Alex, now I want to ask. So, I want you to pick a player outside of the first three rounds. So, outside of the every player picked in the first three rounds, who do you think will have the biggest impact, especially in this upcoming season?
Yeah, so just looking at this upcoming season in general, I'm going to go with Deuce Vaughn, the running back out of Kansas State, and going in the sixth round, pick 35 to the Cowboys. They got rid of Zeke, released him in the offseason. They're starting running back Tony Pollard. Is probably going to either miss or be limited in the first part of the season with a broken leg that he suffered in the playoffs. The only other running backs on the roster are Malik Davis and Ronald Jones. So I expect Deuce Vaughn to come in and maybe be that first running back on the field. I thought he played great at Kansas State, really versatile in the pass game, run game. I was really surprised he was there in the sixth round. But kudos for the Cowboys for getting him here. I think he'll fit perfectly next to Tony Pollard, even when he gets healthy.
You know, this is one of the things I'm back and forth on. You know, I look at the what the Eagles were able to do with selecting Kelee Ringo in the fourth round. But I also look at how far DeJuan Jones fell with the Cleveland Browns being able to get him in the fourth round. Out of those two, I think that DeJuan Jones is probably going to be the person who's going to make a bigger impact. His sheer size, it just amazes me, sitting at 7'8". I know he has injury problems. He's a lot like Darnell Washington with, you know, knees. And these are a huge issue for these bigger guys. But I looked at what he was able to do at Ohio State when he was healthy, and he was just dominant on that offensive line. The Cleveland Browns definitely need a lot of help at the offensive line. So, you know, picking up DeJuan Jones in the fourth round was a very, very good selection. I think he's going to make a huge impact for him.
For me, I think I look back on what quarterback needs – wide receiver or tight end or pass catching help the most. And I'm like, man, Mac Jones really needs some help at the Patriots. The Patriots weren't, I mean, they picked Christian Gonzalez, who I think was a really good pick in the first round. And then they did not, there were some really good receivers and tight ends in this draft. And we talked about how far Darnell Washington fell earlier, but they were able to get Kayshon Boutte out of LSU with the 187th overall pick in the sixth round. I think he could make immediate impact and come in and be a starting wide receiver for this Patriots team. Right beside, did they take Juju Smith-Schuster? I think that could be a good duo there for Mac Jones, getting as much help for him as possible, because otherwise, I mean, the poor kid, I don't understand what the Patriots were doing. I thought they were going to go really high with a wide receiver pick, maybe try and get Jackson Smith and Jigba or Jordan Addison or somebody like that. But so – before we end off here, Nathan, I want to ask you, and then Alex, I'll ask you about your our team, really. Nathan, I want to ask you about the Saints draft. give me your right. thoughts. What are you feeling as a Saints fan about what New Orleans did this past weekend?
You know, over the past few years, I've really questioned who is in the Saints front office, who's making these picks, because they're just not very smart. And this year, I think, it was a decent year for the draft for us. You know, getting Brian Bercy, he is a great prospect. I really liked him going in the first round. I think that one of the biggest things, you know, we selected Jake Haener out of Fresno State, the quarterback out of Fresno State, when we just traded for a guy in Derek Carr. I felt like there were so many better prospects available in the fourth round that we could have selected. Overall, I'm not like super disappointed, but we definitely could have done better. It's definitely not been like past years where I just want to, you know, unscrew my head and, you know, just not think anymore. So it's definitely a better year.
So that's interesting. So Alex, now give me your thoughts on the Carolina Panthers draft. Coming from a Panthers fan, obviously Bryce Young with the number one overall pick, and then four other players, obviously Jonathan Mingo, DJ Johnson, the guard from NC State, Chandler Zavada, I think is how you say his name, and then Jamie Robinson from Florida State. What do you think about that draft?
Yeah, so with the first overall pick, them getting Bryce Young, a sigh of relief there. Really thought they were going to surprise me and take some quarterback like Will Levis or Anthony Richardson. But when his name was read off the card by Roger Goodell, I took just a big sigh of relief. And I was really just grateful that they took him there. Then getting Jonathan Mingo in the second round, also thought that was great, especially with DJ Moore no longer on the Panthers with that trade to go up number one overall pick. Getting Jonathan Mingo to come in, a lot of people had him first round talent. I think will come in and be a good thing, good weapon for Bryce Young. He has experience playing with Matt Corral, who's also on the roster at quarterback. So I think Mingo was a good thing there. He'll develop well with Adam Thielen being the veteran in that core at wide receiver. Then the biggest head scratcher to me was the fact the Panthers traded up in the third round to go ahead and select the outside linebacker DJ Johnson. There are a lot of better players on this board that were really needed for this Panthers team. DJ Johnson is a converted tight end. He's 24 years old, very raw prospect. Didn't think he was warranted as a third round pick. I definitely think they probably could have got him in the fifth round. I don't know what we were thinking here. Definitely bigger needs than an outside linebacker when we had Brian Burns. Then I look at the last two picks, Chandler Zavala and Jamie Robinson. Thought those were okay. Zavala has experience playing with the Panthers' first-round pick last year, Ike Ekwonu. I think that'll be good for them to pair each other on the line, especially with Austin Corbett out for the beginning part of the season at offensive guard. I think Zavala will come in and hopefully fill that need for the time being. Jamie Robinson, it looks like Jeremy Chin's going to come down in the box and play more of that role on Frank Reich's defense. So getting Jamie Robinson to go into that DB room, which last season, Gray, you can probably back me up here, looked lost, to say the least. Definitely thought Jamie Robinson was a great pick, but I think instead of DJ Johnson, the Panthers probably should have addressed the corner position a little bit more, a little bit better. We didn't pick up CJ Henderson's fifth-year option, so it looks like this cornerback room is very thin as is. So overall, the Panthers draft, I was pleased with. The biggest thing I was pretty disappointed with was our third round pick.
Yeah, DJ Johnson did bring up some questions for me as well, but I like Bryce. I like Jonathan. I think those were two very good first and second round picks, so I'm excited for the Carolina Panthers' future. That's all the time we have for the draft. Alex, I'll let you get us out of here.
Yep, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.